Welcome to the Stretch Podcast, a listening experience for self-improvers and stretchers looking to master life.
Hello and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. My name is Lebopule, your host. I created this podcast to have conversations on matters that are closest to my heart. Matters of emotional intelligence and spiritual growth. Matters of mental and physical wellness. Matters of wealth creation and building. Matters of knowledge and wisdom of ages. Matters affecting society and dealing with social ills. As well as matters of a light-hearted nature and fun, because, you know, we've got to laugh. I will be having these conversations with guests who are experts, have experience and know-how. Guests with open heart and generous spirits. Here is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. Hey, hey, hello, Dumelang, my friends, Dumelang. It is I, Lebopule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today, oh my goodness, I have Reverend Stephanie Clark, and we are talking sex and religion. You remember when I returned, when I did my solo, I did tell you that I'm going to stretch you a little bit more. And I did say that sex conversations are going to be a regular of some sort. And so this is it. I mean, we started with Casey Blake on sex and sexuality. Really more the politics of sex, if you think about it. The socio-politics and social politics of sex. With Reverend Steph, we are talking religion specifically. And sex, because she is a reverend. She is a minister ordained of the church, although she is not running a church anymore right now. I will tell you all about Reverend Steph, as usual, in the second segment of the intro. So for now, though, I just want to share something that's in my heart. And I'm doing this intro on a Saturday morning. So basically, if you're listening to this podcast on a Sunday, this intro was done yesterday. And the conversation I had with Reverend Stephanie Clark was very early in May. It was mid-May. It was around the same week that I had a conversation with Casey. And the reason we're having this episode now is because I needed a bit of space between Casey and Reverend Steph, so that, you know, there's a bit of a gap between the sex episodes. But I'm doing this intro on a Saturday, which is not usual. I normally do my intros in the week around Thursday, sometimes Wednesday, so that when the weekend comes, I'm done with work and I can actually have a weekend. Because when you work the kind of work that I do, it's very easy to work around the clock every day of the week. I mean, as it is, I have something almost every day of the week. Okay, so I'm doing it on a Saturday because yesterday, on a Friday, the 18th, I had an all-day workshop with incredible women of an organization called SEF, S-E-F, and Small Enterprise Foundation, if you are wondering, because it's an acronym for many things, Small Enterprise Foundation. And I'll tell you all about it in the organization in the newsletter, in the coming up newsletter. If you do subscribe, I'll talk about the organization and what they do, because they do incredible work. But yesterday I had the pleasure of running a women empowerment workshop, which for all, you know, for me, it wasn't a women empowerment workshop. It was a healing circle, because I am just loving what is sort of happening in the air, in what's happening in the psyche of organizations or corporate, you know, that they seem to be gravitating towards healing and well-being of their staff. I did a similar session with Brandis A last year in December, where the brief was, we want motivation, inspiration and all that, but we also want to offload and we want some healing. We want you to just hold space for us. Well, that's not the words, but when I do the sessions, it comes out like that, that one is sort of holding space for you know, for these women. And I had 94. Even on Zoom, it's a lot. Remember, energy is real. Energy is energy. Energy transcends any space. Whether it's on Zoom or it's live, you will feel what is in the room. In this case, it's in the Zoom room. And I was so deeply humbled and really honored that I was part of a space where so many people felt so safe to share what's in their hearts. And yeah, obviously the workshop was also about personal power. I mean, my table of contents, I had segmented my workshop into three parts because these women are all seniors in that they are all managers. They're branch managers, supervisors, really people in leadership. Meaning they look after someone. There's a subordinate that reports to them. So they're all in leadership. So the workshop was, I had segmented it into three parts, which is the first one is understanding who you are and your personal power. You know, it's just content that I created, very, very powerful, even if I say so myself. So that was the morning bit, understanding who you are and your personal power. The mid-morning, it was self-leadership and leading others because they are in leadership. And then the afternoon section was personal growth, what it means to grow. But in between all that, lots of healing took place. So I'm getting a sense that we as human beings and as organizations, we are moving towards understanding that we are actually human beings. Yes, it is about the bottom line in organizations. But it is also about people. And I'm so honored that I am finding myself in that space that I can offer that. And if you follow the podcast regularly, if you're a regular listener, you will always pick up that I always mention with a guest or even in the intros that it's almost as though COVID or post-COVID or COVID times where some of us were prepared for that. Our work was such that we needed to go through what we were going through. I needed to be here right now at this moment so that I can offer what I'm offering not only to my individual students, but to organizations, because it seems to now be a trend. And before, Brenda say I had done similar stuff, but not quite, because it was pre-COVID. So the first three that I did with EmpowerDex, you know, the big BEE organization? Yeah, I did something with their women there, just a one-day workshop. Etion is another where I had a whole-day dialogue, where it was a whole morning, rather, dialogue with women in the workplace. And then Brand Essay, and then now SF, and there's just a few also in the cards that we am sort of talking to because they're very interested in this. And so I couldn't do anything yesterday. And I know that I promised you that my intros will be short, but I did also say that if there's something I feel you need to know, I will share. So, yeah, forgive me. But I think this is worth sharing in case you're sitting there and you're an HR manager, because it is HR directors, HR managers that contact me, and a few of them are on my newsletter list. So if you're sitting there, you're HR, you're dealing with the fact that something has to change. COVID really disturbed you. We could talk. I really have a lot of helpful content for your staff. Lots of helpful content. I mean, in the session yesterday, we even went into shadow work a bit. We went even longer than I thought they would, because I felt that shadow work is very scary and I can't bring it into corporate or into an organization. It's more the work I do with an individual that comes to my school. But they were willing. They were like, take us there. Let's go there. And yes, they were shook because shadow work does shake you. If you are not shook by shadow work, you don't understand it. Shadow work is like quantum physics. If it doesn't shake you and rattle you, then you are not understanding it. So yeah, I wanted to just share that. So if you're sitting there, you are in HR, you are in organizational training and development, and you can tell that your old strategies of doing team buildings is just not hitting the mark, let's talk, because all people want is to heal. People want to heal and offload and get a sense of being seen and heard and understood. And I'm not the only one, but I am well-placed. I have a unique product to can give to you. Okay, so that's what I wanted to talk about, and that's what I wanted to say, that I just couldn't. I was so tired, but you know that good tired? Good tired, because I had emptied myself to them, and I really held space for them. But there was just no way I would do an intro for a podcast. I needed to sleep and rest and then come back so that I don't give you tired energy or drained energy. But also I wanted to share this. You know, I really did want to share this. So yeah, that is it. I do have something else to share, but it will take long. I'll share it next week. It has to do with Stretch School. There's quite a lot of inquiries, so we'll tell you what's going to happen. Because July is the last month of the program, and from August I start recruiting for new students and blah, but a lot is going to change, but I'll talk about all those changes in the next week intro or in the newsletter or somewhere. When I just stay tuned in my things, subscribe to my newsletter, follow the Stretch School page on Instagram or on Facebook, but I prefer the Instagram one because it's easier to access. Facebook pages are tough. So if you are not on Instagram, just be on Instagram to follow Stretch, because it's easier to see what I'm doing there. Unlike on Facebook, Facebook does bump you down, you know, because they want us to sponsor, to boost, to pay. Understandable, it's their business model. But Instagram, I find it a little bit more forgiving. And I love posting on Instagram about Stretch work. It feels better than Facebook in a weird way. Okay, so yeah, that's it. Let us take a bit of a break, and then I will come back and introduce you to Reverend Stephanie Clark.
Personal growth coaching or life coaching has become an accepted alternative for anyone seeking guidance in order to overcome obstacles, difficulties, and healing caused by past traumas. It is also the most effective tool to use when you want to achieve desired goals, regain confidence, self-love, self-esteem, and self-worth in order to be the best version of yourself. Lebo Bule, a natural teacher, has been coaching for over 8 years. Using ancient wisdom and knowledge, she's able to gently and firmly guide or coach you through whatever struggle you are faced with. Her natural talent to connect deeply and teach others has seen her helping many over the years. Book your first coaching conversation with her now at bookings@lebobule.co.za.
All right, now let me introduce you to Reverend Stephanie Clark. So Reverend Stephanie Clark is one of the people I know personally, even though I met her officially once, but we really just bonded and liked each other very much and, you know, had a few exchanges on Facebook inbox. We met through a good friend of mine, Muzi Klindi. A lot of people, my friends on Facebook, know Muzi Klindi because of his controversial ways. In fact, we will have, if he is willing, have him on the podcast very, very soon, hopefully, so he can talk about his spiritual journey, because he's got such a fascinating spiritual journey. So we met through him at an event that Muzi had hosted in 2017 called The Divine Feminine. It was huge. I was one of the speakers there. In fact, I was the first speaker talk about pressure. And what made the pressure so intense was because amongst the speakers was Reverend Michael Beckwith. Guys, Michael Beckwith was in the audience. And not only that, Michael Beckwith was, I met him closely at supper the evening before the big event. So we were all in the panel of speakers, and Reverend Steph was there. And Reverend Steph and I met on the 17th because she wasn't part of the dinner. No, why am I saying on the 17th? On the day of the event. I think I'm confusing it with 2017. On the day of the event, she wasn't part of the dinner the night before, but on the day itself, we were all in this, what do they call it, where speakers are held before, yeah, the holding room, and we just bonded, and we were both nervous, and because it was massive, I mean, it was at Sandton Convention Center, and I think we had an audience of probably just over 3,000 people, imagine. And so we're like literally holding each other's hands and space, and we got to know each other. And I was intrigued and fascinated by Reverend Steph's talk because she was going to talk on God and sex, sex and God. And I was really looking forward to her talk. And indeed, when her time came, and I do tell her this in the conversation, that there was a moment when she was there on stage and really just uncovering the deepest truths that obviously are taboos. It was so silent in the room. You could have sworn that there's nobody, even though there was over 3,000 people in the audience. So that's how I met her, and that's how we got to sort of know each other through Muzi. And I mean, they're one big circle. Them, Muzi, Bishop Khoza, Jackson Khoza, who interestingly was my pastor many, many, many years ago, back when I was in Sunday school, when I was a very little girl, 9-year-old. You know, I always talk about my Sunday school days. Yeah, he's one of the fathers that I went through as I was growing in my own journey of spirituality before my mom took us to Jehovah's Witnesses. So yeah, this is a little background on how I know Steph, but let me read a little bit of her bio, maybe just a few lines, if I could find it. I always do this. Okay, there I found it. All right, so let me see where I can start. Reverend Stephanie Clark is known as the Irreverend Reverend. I mean, I just love that word play there, because she loves to expose the religious and cultural taboos around God, sex, and death, especially sex. Trained by Reverend Michael Beckwith, as I said. Michael Beckwith, if you don't know who he is, he's the guy of The Secret. Remember The Secret, the famous book, The Secret? That guy who had long dreadlocks, handsome. That's Michael Beckwith. That's the guy I met and I took pictures with and selfies. Back to Reverend Stephanie Clark. Trained by Michael Beckwith of The Secret fame at Agape Spiritual Center in Los Angeles, Reverend Steph became a metaphysical minister in 1998. So that's a long time ago, eh? That's 23 years ago. So you can see what type of person we are talking about. And an ordained interfaith minister in 2018. In 2000, she founded Soul Home in Johannesburg at the first New Thought multiracial ministry in South Africa, consciously dedicated to healing the wounds of apartheid. So do you see the kind of weight I'm talking about? And the rest of the bio is on the show notes and some of the links to her work. She currently has a free webinar, or she's going to have a free webinar going on the 10th of July. You might want to hop on to that. But yeah, what we covered in the conversation is obviously the myths around sex, in particular female sexuality and its power. We spoke about Mary Magdalene. You know Mary Magdalene, who was said to be a prostitute? And Reverend Steph just shared with me that actually that story is being corrected that she wasn't in fact a prostitute. Very interesting things happening in the religious space there. We spoke about, I mean, she shared about the chakra system, divine femininity, and the whole story Jay, around sex and religion. It's a very relaxed conversation. It's not too, it is stretchy because, I mean, if you're going to talk about sex and religion, you are going to stretch people. But for me, it's not as stretchy as I know it could have been. And that was deliberate on both our parts. We really just didn't want to shock people too much. And also deliberately because she will return. I will have her back for more content on the subject of God and sex, God and death, and the likes. So we were very light, but you will find it stretchy. So it's not watered down at all. It's relaxed. It's calm. We laugh a lot. As you know, if I'm in the midst, there's going to be a bit of giggles. And you will just love her energy and her heart and other things that we talk about over and above sex and religion. Without further ado, I give you the irreverent, Reverend Stephanie Clark.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast.
Reverend Steph, good morning. Is it good morning or good evening or whatever? Because I'm sitting here and it's nearly 8:30 p.m. on a Wednesday. What time it is wherever you are?
Well, good morning, good evening, Lebo. It's 10:10 now in Oregon, where I live in America. 10:11 in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, strange world, isn't it? So it's the morning of a Wednesday, or yeah, it's morning of a Wednesday because I'm about to sleep. Yes. Oh wow, fascinating world, and it's a full moon. I don't know if you are into the moon or whatever.
Oh yeah, like, we were watching it last night. It's so gorgeous.
It's beautiful. It's huge, and apparently it's eclipse season. I don't know. I follow these things, but sometimes I get absolutely lost. So welcome to the Stretch Podcast, and thank you so much for agreeing, because I love your work. I think your work is brave. I think I was a reverend in my past life because I love all things religion, and I like to fight it and dissect it and challenge it. And today's topic is very, very challenging. I mean, sex and God, who does that? But before that...
who does sex or who does God or who does both? That's the question.
Oh, man, Rev, before we get to that, let's start with congratulations. You have just gotten married. How's married life now? You know, at your... I don't know if you've been married before, but... You not are not a, you've never, okay, uh-uh. So you can't compare to when you were 25.
No, this is nothing that can be compared with anything. Married life is, well, it's, we've been living together for just over a year, so, but there was something that shifted when we got married, and that's a good thing.
In terms is it?
Of, yeah, I see marriage as a transformational shift of note. I used to do weddings when I was practicing actively as a minister, and yeah. I would explain to my couples about the fact that marriage isn't just about, you know, having the big party and wearing a pretty white dress and all of that, which a lot of people get hooked up into the appearances and the, you know, getting the attention, getting the photographer, all of that. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's a profound transformational shift from the notion of separation, like we're two separate individuals, and in the space of this sacred ceremony, we are going to acknowledge that in truth we are one, and we're going to flesh that out during the course of our marriage. So our commitment is to be together in such a way that our oneness reveals itself through unconditional love of one another.
So my word, now I want to talk about marriage. That is so profound. Yep. I love that you said that there was a notable shift, because I'm in a union. I am not married. Mm-hmm. We've been in long distance relationship for a while, and then I moved in with him in 2017. Mm-hmm. And you know, moving in obviously it's a new dimension. It changes everything a little bit. And yeah. Everyone who's married and who understands marriage the way you do always say that there's a shift that happens once you mm-hmm. say I do. So it's mm-hmm. true. It's not imagined.
It's for me, it's not imagined for me. And I believe with the couples that I've married too, that they've noticed that it's really different afterwards, even if they've been together for a long time, even if, you know, they already called themselves married, because my husband and I have called ourselves married from very early on. We knew immediately, and we got engaged within a month of meeting each other, and we had a private wedding ceremony within 2 months of meeting each other. And so from that time onward, we've called each other husband and wife.
Yeah.
But doing that, the public commitment, that's where the shift took place. So some couples might have a private agreement that they're partners for life, or that they're in a committed relationship, and they're going to hang in and do the journey together, no back doors, you know, which is, if you don't have that from the beginning, the marriage ceremony isn't going to create that.
Yes,
the marriage ceremony,
yes,
it's not about the commitment. Yeah. So the commitment is in your heart, and it's ideally voiced to one, voiced between you, that you're here for the long haul, and that you're going to use everything that comes up, every conflict that comes up, as a doorway to greater intimacy and trust.
Oh, definitely. Wow. Yeah. I'm on the fence about marriage, because I've always been, I'm never going to do it. Ha ha ha. And I don't know if it's because I've turned 45, and somehow, I don't know. You'll be one of the first people to know, so you can marry us via Zoom.
I'll do that with pleasure. I was just thinking the same thing.
Okay, before we get into the topic, another thing I want to just quickly touch on is 2021. How is 2021 for you, given, you know, where we come from in the new world, you know, in the new normal, or whatever 2020 did? How is it this year for you?
Well, for me, I feel like COVID was one of the biggest blessings in my life. And for some people, it was one of the biggest, what can I say? I don't want to say use the word curse, but one of the most painful experiences they've ever had to go through. And I, you know, having people die, not being able to say goodbye to loved ones, all of that is just a horrific pain that spread across the planet.
Yeah.
And for me, COVID was my impetus to get myself to America to be with my husband, because I could see that, you know, we had planned to get married last year on the 25th of April in South Africa. He was going to fly to South Africa, and we were going to have a wedding with a lot of people, you know, Muzi, Bishop Jackson, all my homies.
All the circle,
Bishop Jackson was going to be our wedding minister. And anyway, it was all planned, all beautifully, you know, in falling into place seamlessly, which let me know that this was something magical that was occurring, because there were no blockages or obstacles, except that COVID caused Jim's flight to be cancelled to South Africa. So without the groom, you know, we weren't going to go through with the marriage. and then we realized that, you know, if his flight was cancelled and the American borders were closed, so no one could leave America, and we knew that then the time would come when no one could get into America. So I quickly booked a flight. It happened within a week that I completely changed my life and moved to America. And I'm so glad that I made that move. And I feel like it was divine guidance, divine protection, that I was just lifted up out of South Africa and plonked down here in Oregon, where I've been beautifully cared for, been safe and protected from COVID, because we live in a house in a rural area. We don't have neighbors, and I've just been, you know, thanks to Jim works and supports me, and I've been allowed to be at home and work on my business and get my whole coaching programs launched, and I've learned how to do webinars and learned how to do
I see your soulmate thing. Yeah, we'll talk about that
exactly.
As well.
Yeah,
and you're continue.
All of that is like a brand new life for me in a brand new world. And before, you don't know much about my life before I met you, but I was always on a flight, always traveling, always moving. I couldn't sit still. And I've been grounded for a year, and it's been the most healing thing. It's been wonderful.
It must have been the most. I mean, it shows. It even shows when you post. You know how we just pick up energy from someone's post and you just seem so happy. That's why I came into your DMs and I'm like, nah, we need to talk. I think it's time. Because I've always wanted you as a guest on the podcast, but I just never got around to it. So we are grateful to Jim and America and COVID and all that, you know.
Yeah.
And as a spiritual teacher, I mean, how do you identify yourself now? How do you refer to yourself? Because you're not in direct ministry anymore. You don't have a church, do you?
Yeah, no, my church in South Africa is being beautifully led by Reverend Gerd Ponto, who took over from me when I left South Africa. So he's doing a fabulous job. And so spiritually, I think I'm expressing myself spiritually through this kind of medium, through talking to people about my spiritual ideas on podcasts and interviews, and then also doing my spiritual work with my clients, which is assisting them to shift their consciousness so that they can attract their soulmate using the law of attraction.
Yeah, true. Okay, so I want to talk about that part of your life when we towards the end, so that we can get into the topic. So thank you for all that. And it's nice to just quickly catch up. Now, sex and God, and the reason, you know why I chose this topic with you, because when we met for the first time I met you, we were about to be on stage. We were both guests in that massive conference where we met. I mean, can you believe we met Michael Beckwith? I mean, we shared a stage with the likes of Michael Beckwith. The night before, we had dinner with him. I don't think you made it the night before. Were you there? You were not at the dinner. I was sitting next to him.
Amazing.
I took selfies with him. So, yeah. So we met the next day, you and I, and I think we were following each other in our talks. I don't remember, but we connected nicely. And, and I think we were there for supporting one another because it was a massive, massive event. And you were speaking on sex and God, if I'm not mistaken. And
that's right.
Yo, I remember, I mean, in the middle of your talk, it was so dead quiet because of the concepts you were bringing. So that's one of the things I want to talk to you about. And that's why we chose the topic. So first question, what is the deal with sex and God and humans? What is the taboo? What is the story around this thing? Why is it like this? Why does it confuse us and frustrate us and fascinate us? What's going on?
Oh, wow. That's a huge question. How long have we got? So my understanding is that we've been abused by the Bible around the area of sexuality. We've been betrayed and misled and misinformed. That when the Bible was written, there was an agenda, which did not include female sexuality as something holy, healing, powerful, amazing, filled with awe and wonder. So there was, before the patriarchal religions began to take over, there was a belief that women were magical beings. This was in the more goddess, feminine orientated religions before patriarchal religions took over. So women were seen as magical creatures. They were seen as creative beings. And it was assumed that if a woman creates life out of her body, then the planet must be the creation of a great mother through her body. That was the assumption, which is like logical for people who don't know how babies are made. And so women and their sexuality we were seen. Am I speaking only to women here in your audience, or could there be men here as well?
No, I have a lot of male.
Oh, okay. So when I say we, I shouldn't say, so I'd say women. I wanted to say we, but I want to include the men. So women were seen as magical beings, creative beings, and sexuality was celebrated. Sexuality was seen as something that was pleasurable, creative, and it was an act of worship to the Great Mother, and an act that would, the ancients believed that the sexual act would be in line with what was important in those days, which was the fertility of the soil, because the fertility of the cattle, the crop, everything had to be fertile in order for humans to survive on the planet.
Yes.
And
yes.
So sex was part of that celebration of fertility. So then that shifted. And for me, the goddess religions really support and endorse life, pleasure, sex, creation. All of that is really something that's celebrated. And then with the patriarchal religions, particularly Christianity, it came to be the opposite of what was celebrated. And what then became celebrated was death and sin. Yeah. So the themes of Christianity are, you know, you're going to die, and this is the old style. I know that that's nothing that you believe anymore, but the old style of Christianity is, you know, you better be good on earth, because if you're not good, according to some perfect standard, then you're going to die. And when you die, you're going to go to hell and you're going to burn in the flames forever. These are all mythological concepts that are not based on truth. They're based on wanting to control people's minds. And for me, that's what it's about. So the church has more power when it can control the minds of its constituents. And the men have forever been afraid of women, been afraid of our sexual power.
Yes, and it's funny because you just went straight to my second question, that what is this fear or this need to control women's sexuality, you know, taking it from where you started, where you, you know, the ancient religions that were goddess-based, celebrating fertility, sexuality. What happened? Where did it all turn? Where did patriarchy take over? And why this fear of us, you know?
So my understanding is that there was a historical shift. So the goddess religions were alive and well in Europe and Middle East, and then there was an invasion from warring tribes from Georgia in Russia, and the warring tribes they worshipped a male god, and their god was the god of volcanoes, the god of thunder, the god that was like we talk about God in the Bible as, you know, the God spake through the thunder, or there was a in the Bible, there's like allusions to God being some kind of thunderous God. And that's all a hangover from the tribes that invaded Europe and the Middle East. And it could have been an invasion to take over the land. And it could also have been like a religious crusade where they wanted to deliberately convert the people of Europe and the Middle East to their own particular belief system, which was based on male superiority, male supremacy. So whereas in the goddess religions, there was a divine mother in the heavens. So when the more male orientated religions started to take over, there was a divine father in the heavens. And the father was made out to be the creative element. So that's why we get Adam creating Eve out of his rib. Like somehow the ancients had to make it up that the male was the creative power. And the priestesses would say, well, no one's ever going to believe that. It's stupid. It's rubbish. But it's a tribute to the fact that if you hear something often enough and enough people agree with it, you start to believe it too. I mean, that's just how our minds work. If we're exposed to something ongoingly that is seen to be true, we'll eventually start to believe it. Even if everything within us screams, that can't be true. Creation does not happen out of a rib.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah.
In the feminist movement, they always say that people don't come from ribs. People come from vaginas.
Exactly.
And it's like, duh, actually, that's true. Because there's nowhere else do human beings come from but from the body of the woman.
Exactly.
Now, women's sexuality is obviously very powerful, and I think also male, you know, but sexuality on its own is very powerful. Now, there is a theory, and I think you sort of touched on it in that talk, if you could recall, where you mentioned how, I think it's Mary Magdalene who used to heal people through sexuality, or was it, I don't know if it was Mary Magdalene or it was the mythical goddess that you were speaking of. Can you talk to that, the healing power of having sex or of women's sexuality? And I'll tell you where I'm coming from with this.
Okay, so it relates to the last question as well. I'm not sure that I answered it fully around why I'm afraid of women.
Please.
Yeah.
Yes,
So women, in order to have power and control, women were taught to hate their bodies and to consider that sex was sinful. And then St. Augustine came along in the 5th century and made it all up that sex is the original sin, so that everyone who's born of a sexual relationship is automatically sinful and has to pray to Jesus Christ for redemption. That's what salvation means, that you pray to be relieved of the sin of sex that you come from. How's that ever going to happen? It's impossible.
Oh, wow. It hasn't happened.
Here we are, still having sex, still enjoying it.
Still at it.
Yeah. So now let me get back to, so why were men afraid of women? Because of women's sexual power. And I'm not just referring now to the power to... to attract a man, the power to bring forth new life. But there's a sexual power that women have that we've been trained to not access and to not be able to fully utilize and express for fear of being persecuted. But there's a sexual power that women have that is completely uncontrollable by men. And I've experienced it myself. That I've experienced the power in my vagina, the power that is completely mine, it's feminine, and it creates worlds, and it's something that men cannot control. And so if in this world where we're taught that we have dominion over the, I think it's the beast of the field, or we have dominion over...
In Genesis,
the fish in the sea, that's it. We have dominion. Yeah. So that word dominion's been interpreted to mean domination. And that's not what it means. It doesn't mean you have to control everything. It means that you have dominion, that you have to be good stewards of this earthly plane. It doesn't mean you control the earthly plane and cut it up to your own satisfaction in order to have the maximum profit from the land or the cattle or whatever. It's not about...
Oh, the sea. Currently the sea is
the
dying.
The sea, exactly. I mean, yeah. It's like the male patriarchal energy has raped the land. Sorry, now I've forgotten the question. It was about, can you remind me?
Sexual power of women.
Sexual power of women, yeah. So that sexual power is what men are really afraid of. And sadly, because of the fear and because of the need to try to control that power, women have been, in a way, castrated, and we've been relegated to the role of domestic slave, domestic servant, and you know, paid less in the marketplace for doing the same kind of work as men. So we've been stripped of that power. And so what's exciting for me now is that that's coming into conscious awareness. It's not just like we're being victims and we're victims for the rest of our lives. No, we have the power to access that internal feminine power again. And so the more that we access that, the more that we become fully expressed as divine feminine beings, the more the planet can heal, and actually men can heal too. Because no one wins if the divine power of either sex is suppressed and abused.
And do you think the rape culture, you know, across the world, in a way, it's part of really just because, you know, there is no worse violation to us women than to be raped, and to be violated in that way. Do you think that's also part of stripping away our power? As you know, apparently rape has very little to do with sex. It's almost like they innately know that this is the weakest spot we can actually get them.
Yeah.
So that's part of it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So if through our sexuality we can be more powerful than men, then they have to hurt us there in order to feel the power over us. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Because honestly, the violation, the worst violation you can ever do to a woman is to rape her. It takes everything away from her. And where I'm going is perhaps at a deep, deep spiritual level, sometimes even unconscious to the man himself. That's sort of what they're doing, taking away someone's power. Mm-hmm. Now, do you know anything? Because I just don't want to throw you into at a deep ends, because I want us to also focus. Do you know anything about the chakra system and how the sacral chakra is where our sexual power really lies?
Yeah.
And that if you are going to have sex with a particular person, you are either giving, they're taking from you or they're giving you. So in other words, it talks to be very careful who you have sex with. Do you know anything around that?
Yes, I do. Thank you, because I love this organic circular communication with you. Now you've just reminded me of the previous question about Mary Magdalene.
Yes. No, don't worry. It will actually come out quite okay in the podcast.
Yeah, no, it'll be fine. I'm not worried. It's just a very feminine conversation where we don't have a linear track, really. I mean, you've tried to be linear with your questions, but it's not going to happen in a linear way.
No. Accepted. Yeah.
So let me address Mary Magdalene, because that relates directly to the question about the chakras as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. So what I talked about in my talk, and I'm very touched that you remembered, was the fact that Jesus it's written about Jesus that he removed 7 demons from Mary Magdalene. And then the Christian narrative is that, of course, Mary Magdalene was the wicked sinner, which was never true, but she was seen as the prostitute, and that was considered sinful. I don't know if you know that she's been since relieved of that mistaken identity that was foisted upon her.
No, I had no idea. How did that happen? History files.
Recently, sorry, I don't have the exact date for you, but the Catholic Church agreed that she wasn't a prostitute, she had been associated with other women who were prostitutes, and it was just convenient that there were women in the Bible that clearly were prostitutes, and that she was just identified with them. And it just was very, very convenient that she was the wicked, sinful woman, because it was more of the Eve story, but in the New Testament. So where Eve was the wicked sinner.
Who led the men. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that's more of vilifying women in the New Testament, and very convenient that Jesus could save her, you know, could save her from the sin of her sexuality. Again, something foisted on Mary Magdalene by the patriarchal culture that perceived prostitution as a sin, without taking into consideration that if a woman was not attached to a man in any way in the patriarchal system, she would starve. So if she didn't have a brother, didn't have a husband, didn't have a father, didn't have any male authority that would earn a living and protect and support her, she was literally on her own. And what do women do when they have no other means of support? They sell their body. It's all they've got.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, without even blinking, because, you know, how do I survive? Yeah,
exactly. So basic survival was prostitution, not because of the male projection upon the women that they were sexually licentious and couldn't get enough sex, and that's why they had to sell their bodies so that they could get more sex. That's the completely the male perspective of how a woman's sexuality works. Anyway, so that's a little aside there.
History.
Yeah. So Jesus removing the 7 demons from Mary Magdalene refers to cleansing the 7 chakras. So we have 7 chakras, which are like wheels of energy in our bodies, and we have one called the root chakra, which would be like right at the base of the spine and in your genital area. We have the sacral chakra, which is in the belly area, and that's the one you were just mentioning about that's about sexuality and the womb giving
movement
birth. And then the chakra in the solar plexus, which is our chakra for power. The chakra in the heart, which is for love and balance, and in the throat for expression and creativity, in the third eye area, in the forehead for mental, intellectual capacity, and then in the crown of the head, and that's the spiritual chakra, which has our connection to the entire cosmos. So the deal is to have the energy flowing up from the earth, down from the cosmos, flowing through our human bodies in an unimpeded, unobstructive way, and flowing through all the chakras. So all the chakras are spinning nicely all of the time, and that way we walk the earth as very balanced, harmonious, healthy beings. Now, who can do that? Not many people. There might be some gurus that have got that whole energy system sorted out. I know that I haven't, and that most of us walk around with traumatic blocks in all of these chakras. So I guess we can assume that women are blocked in their sexual chakra, even if they're sexually active, even if they've had kids and opened up their womb to receiving a child and giving birth to a child. We're blocked because of our cultural conditioning. So, and anything that we can unblock brings new life into our experience. So that all the blocks like shut down on the life capacity that we have to express. So if the throat is shut down, we feel like we can't speak, or no one hears us. If someone ever said to you, "Oh, you can't sing," then your throat chakra would have a block and you would feel afraid of singing. If someone ever said to you, you have a cold heart, well, maybe they said it because your heart is really cold and shut down, but maybe they said it because they didn't get the love from you that they wanted. Either way, it doesn't really matter. If you took that on as a complaint or a criticism, your heart would get shut down and you'd be afraid about loving and about expressing yourself. Many of us protect our hearts because we're afraid of being hurt, and what that encourages is for us to be hurt because our heart is shut down. We're already hurting ourselves by shutting down our own hearts. So Mary Magdalene, I believe, was a sex priestess trained in the order of Isis, and Isis was the great mother goddess of Egypt, and Isis had temples all over Egypt, which later spread to the whole Roman Empire because of the Roman occupation. There are Isis temples not only in Egypt but also in Europe. I've seen a few of them. There are about seven that remain, and sometimes it's only the foundations, but I've been to a restored temple of Isis in Hungary. Her religion was practiced widely throughout the Roman Empire. And the wonderful thing about Isis is that she had priestesses in her teaching who were simply there to do sex magic. So they understood the chakra system, they understood the energy of sex in the sacral chakra, and they knew how to help men heal through the act of sexual intercourse. They knew how to help men raise the level of their vibration so that they could become closer to God. So can you believe it? In Christianity, sex takes us away from God into the realms of sin and hell. And in the goddess religion, sex takes us closer to God, and it's acknowledged that women have a more essential connection with the earth plane, with sexuality, with spirituality, and men go to women in order to have their own vibration healed and raised so that they can have a greater connection to the whole.
This is absolutely fascinating, and let me start at the end of where you left off about men coming to women for spiritual upliftment and vibrating, raising their vibration. It reminds me of a conversation I had with one guest. I don't know if we recorded it. One of the podcast guests who was speaking on yoga, and she said to me, yoga was originally meant for men so that they can raise and open their chakras because women naturally have that. So the men were meant to practice yoga so that they can lift spiritually. And then I'm also reminded of another guest on the podcast who is just such a gorgeous woman. You'd love her. She's into deep spirituality and the age of Aquarius and all that. You'd like her. And she says that men are meant to, in their true masculinity, and I want us to talk about masculinity and femininity as energies if you still have time. Good, but men who are in their true masculine are meant to protect the female, the feminine, from the hardness of the earth, of, you know, being here in planet Earth, while mm-hmm. the women are meant to bring the men into the spirit, which mm-hmm. is very fascinating, because if you think of Adam and Eve, Rev, it's Eve who supposedly lured Adam out of heaven into the hardship of, you know, it's just, it's all so twisted. So yes. Anyway, I just wanted to add to what you were saying. Mm. And lastly, before you continue, sexually, there's a theory that if you are well aligned with, and I'm talking heterosexual sex here, if you're well aligned with your partner, the act of making love and intercourse is beyond the pleasure, you know, the pleasure of the flesh. You are actually giving him power to go out there and do the things that he needs to do to stand up tall and to really achieve a lot of things, which is why apparently we, as women, we give a lot to men and, you know, and they abuse and they don't give back. Hence, if an elderly woman who's probably in their 60s or whatever gets her husband to die or divorces, they never, ever, ever want to have sex ever again. That's how depleted they get. So anyway, I just wanted to ramble on that and see what you think about all that.
I think I love everything you've just said, all the different points you've raised and the different people that you've spoken to. And I had not heard that idea that yoga was originally meant for men, but it makes perfect sense to me.
It does to me too.
That women women help a man be more fully immersed in his true masculine through the act of sex. But the same goes for if a man is in his full masculine and loving a woman, he helps her to be more fully embodied in her true feminine as well.
Oh, definitely.
It can be reciprocal. Yeah. But it typically hasn't been. I think that was your point, that it's typically been like the man would take and the woman would give and she would feel empty and he would feel full. And yeah.
that's basically generally how it's working. And that's why it's easier for women to actually live alone and make it alone while a man struggles when he's single, especially later in the years. So there is a lot that we give to the masculine or to the men, you know, because masculinity is an energy. It's a spirit. It's not, you know, because you and I are female. Yes, we are now feminine, but we also have our masculinity, our masculine side, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, women who are, as you said, you know, they're widowed or they're divorced and they're in maybe 60 plus, they don't typically choose to be in a partnership again. And women who are not attached to a man and who are not useful to the patriarchal system in terms of birthing the next generation of soldiers to go and fight the patriarchal wars, they're on the rubbish heap. The rubbish heap when their reproduction can no longer be controlled. So after menopause, where they're controllable anymore. So men took it on to control women's reproduction as a kind of substitute for not being actually able to produce life. So rather, they can't produce life, but they can certainly control how women produce life. So that means we have to be a virgin when we get married. God forbid, you know, some other man's kid would be in our belly when we get married to our husband. The women have to be if in the case of an abortion, you know, a woman gets pregnant, she doesn't want to be pregnant. She's the one that gets accused of being a sinner. Whereas the man goes off scot-free and decides to make rules about whether abortion is going to be legal or not for a woman. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, same with the contraceptives. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's us that must carry the, you know, must just have our hormones all messed up.
Yeah.
And they just fine. Yeah.
I read an article yesterday. It was so wonderful about, you know, let's introduce vasectomy, which can be reversed for men until they're old enough and mature enough to be fathers.
crazy. And I'm sure there would be a serious brouhaha about that.
Of course.
There'd be matches, there'd be hashtags.
Yeah.
It's to them now.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
So Rev, let's wrap it up a bit, because I think we've covered quite a bit. You will have to return so we can dissect it even further.
Oh, lovely.
Where are we going with sex and sexuality? Where do you think, let me put it this way, are women sexually liberated in your opinion, or are we still in shackles?
I'd say we're in shackles until we know who we are as divine feminine beings. So the feminist movement was definitely a massive leap in consciousness from being sexual objects and slaves. And it was the energy, though, of battle and war. And what you fight against, you make more of. So what you resist, persist, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So in the work that I do with women, my focus is like, okay, let me not like be in a fight with men, because that doesn't really work. It doesn't work for me to try to establish my power as an equal with men. I'm way superior as a divine feminine being. And let me rather just focus on who I am as a divine feminine being. Let that energy grow within me. Let that power be expressed as me, not to hurt men, not to fight against them, not to prove any kind of superiority, but just to be fully expressed in my own life. The point and the purpose, not to fight against. So that's, to me, the real liberation, that I'm here on earth and fully living in my divine nature. And that's everybody's purpose, actually. But that's also the way for me to liberate myself from this attachment to the unequal gender relationship on the earth plane.
Yes, to be equal to men, to do what men can do. And we followed them into the workplace and that corporate world of theirs, because it is their world.
Yeah.
No wonder we don't actually cope well. I read somewhere that, you know, in our battle to be equal to men, we ended up being the same as men instead of equal to them. And, you know, like you said earlier, that the feminist movement, I mean, it took us from a very, very, very bad place. So I can never, ever vilify it.
No.
But I am also equally saying that I think it's time for a new way of being. Mm-hmm. And it has to come from within. It can't be external. Like
That's
you said, it can be battle. It can be on the battle for, because we can't. Men are off this world, you know, if to put it another way. We won't win their war. The only way we will win, if win is the word, because it's also not the right word to use, because it's a battle thing. But we have to come back to who we truly are, and that is being, deeply, deeply spiritual. Beings that are here to heal the world. I believe that each and every one of us are here for the restoration and healing of the world. And I believe it just needs to start with us.
Mm-hmm.
So sexual liberation will come with that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically going to come only if you are liberated in your spiritual side.
That's it. Yeah, I agree with you.
So you're agreeing. All right, now let's get into your work. You're doing fantastic work with soul mating webinars, and you are connecting people who are older to date. So basically, you have a dating site or dating app or whatever it is where people meet. How is that going, and how did that come about? That's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's actually not really. It's not a dating site or a dating app. I don't really want to work that way. That's not my thing. So I started. I wanted to do workshops for women who were struggling with sexual religious baggage from their childhood. All the notions that sex is sin, and you know, sexuality is wrong, and all of that stuff. And then my teacher said, women, you know, if you go to the Google search engines, no one's looking for items like heal sexual baggage or heal sexual trauma. Some might be, but yes. It's not a popular search item.
Yes, no,
yeah, people want the result that they're looking for after they've healed the sexual baggage. So they want to know that, you know, that they can have happy, healthy sexual partnerships. Mm. Yeah, and I started talking to a friend of mine in the UK, and she said, yes, I've got lots of sexual baggage from my background, but she said, what I really want is what you've got, Stephanie, and you've got your soulmate, and that's what I want. And okay, I get it. This is what is really out there as a deep desire amongst women. And it's not, they don't want to focus on healing their sexual baggage. They want to focus on finding the man that they want to be with for the rest of their lives. And in the process of that, the sexual baggage will also come up for healing.
Yes.
Yeah. So then I started doing webinars in November last year, teaching women how to activate the law of attraction so that they can have the kind of partnership they really want. And all of us are using the law of attraction all of the time, but if we've got unconscious negative beliefs, like, for example, all the best guys are taken. I mean, that belief alone will stop any good guy from coming into your life. And he may be in your life, but you won't even know it. You won't even see it or recognize it, because if you've got the belief all the good guys are taken, everybody who's good is excluded. Everybody, yeah. So I help women identify the negative beliefs that have been blocking them, and I help them get clear on their vision for what a partnership will be like for them. And a lot of women have a fantasy idea about partnership, like it's going to be magical from the very beginning and never going to feel that pain again. So I have to disabuse them of that fantasy notion and talk to them about things like conflict resolution skills and just what it's like to be in a real relationship. And sadly, because of the Hollywood and the romantic notion that, you know, the perfect romance, including the perfect sex, is going to be the ultimate healer of my life.
It's so funny you mentioned Hollywood. Just the other day, I had a similar conversation with another guest of mine, Casey. We were talking about the politics of sex, you know. It's fascinating. You must listen to the conversation if you get time. And she also mentioned that, there is no Hollywood sex. There's no such. It doesn't actually exist. And I think us women are just so duped by the rom-coms and romantic comedies. Mm-hmm. And we really honestly think that if the guy is tall and handsome and smells good, it's going to be the best relationship. And it doesn't actually work like that. So you coach them through all that, wait a minute, it's a human being. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to work through stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
So, why the age group specifically? Because you seem to deal with slightly older people. And what age group is that?
So I talk about 35 plus, and I know when I was 35, I noticed that my waist was starting to thicken, and I noticed that I didn't have money, I didn't have a house, I didn't have kids, I didn't have a regular job. And I thought, I had this notion that at 35, I would be like a real person, like a grown up with a house and with a husband and with kids.
And paying mortgage,
And paying a mortgage, like that. And then I thought, but I don't want any of that. I don't want kids. I don't want a house. I would really love to have a lover, but I don't know that I want a husband. I was very commitment phobic in those days. Anyway, 35 was a turning point for me. And it was like I was out of the youthful fantasy that one day it was going to happen. And it was going to happen of its own accord. I was going to meet the one, and I was going to be settled, and I was going to have this, you know, fairy tale life. And then I realized at 35 that it hadn't happened at that point, and the chances of it happening were slim. So I think, I don't know, just for me, 35 was the turning point where I thought, okay, something has to change. If I want what I want, I have to change in order to be able to attract that. And I didn't want to change in those days. I was still, running,
35
still restless.
How old are you now, Steph? I turned 45, and I know I'm annoying my listeners now because I mention it with every guest. And it's 45 scared the hell out of me, and I'm a January baby. So, you know, the year's beginning, I'm turning older, and for 45 is the age for me that says, wait a minute, this thing is literally not turning back. I'm going to be 70. I moved from 45 to 70. I'm shook. It's a very, very scary age for me. I'm doing things slightly differently. So my 45 was your 35 in a way, but I'm moving along nicely. I'm humbled by life. How old are you now?
I'm 63 in about 3 weeks' time. I'll be 63 next
63.
Month.
63. No, man. Did you say, oh, wow. So is 45 like ancient?
45 feels like a long time ago. Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
I felt like my life really started when I turned 41. That was like the beginning. I've been a better older person than I was when I was young. When I was young, I was just so stupid. Turning 41 was a good thing for me. Yeah.
So your 40s up to now. I mean, you don't even look 63 because I'm thinking maybe she's in her early 50s. Yeah. Okay, cool. So you're getting clients, and because I'm just trying to think of anyone who's listening who wants to work with you. So you work with anyone from anywhere in the world. You use Zoom. I mean, you are out in Oregon. Yep. I'm out here in the Karoo. So we can contact you. But we'll have your details on the show notes anyway for anyone to
fantastic.
Contact
you. Yeah. Awesome.
Okay, so you are my second guest who is going to be doing my rapid fire questions because it's a new thing I'm starting. So you're the second guest I'm doing this with. So I have five questions.
Uh-huh.
It's rapid fire, but you can pause if you need to think about it. So the first question is, what was the happiest day of your life? And at 63, do you have the happiest day of your life? And let me tell you why I ask. I once posted on my Facebook, that very busy Facebook of mine, to see if people can pinpoint their happiest day. And people were struggling because we have many happy days, but they're the happiest. So I just thought it's an interesting quiz to ask people. Mm.
Oh, gosh. Well, my first answer was going to be my wedding day, which was a month ago.
Typical.
Yeah. And then my second answer was going to be the day that I graduated through ministerial school for the first time. That was 1992. I was high as a kite. It was a really happy day. And then my third answer. So here I am already abusing the question with three answers.
But, no, it's fine. it's new, so I can forgive you.
So right before I met Jim, I was in Austria. I used to do some freelance contracts in Austria. And I was on my way, it was a weekend, and I was on my way to visit the site of the ancient goddess of Willendorf. She was a 32,000-year-old goddess that was discovered at the beginning of the last century. And I had been there before, and I was so excited to go back to that sacred spot where the goddess was found. And she's a little goddess figurine. She's about 11 centimeters high, really tiny, but she's in the Vienna Museum right now, but the site where she was found, I love to visit. So I was on my way, and I just began to feel completely blissed out on my own life, just blissed out. I'm in Europe. I love being in Europe. I'm on my way to see the goddess site. Oh, I love worshiping the site of the goddess. And I have a beautiful life in South Africa. I still get to teach at my church. I get to take care of my mom. I get to travel to Europe a couple of times a year and be with my friends in Europe and see the ancient sacred. I just was like,
I think that's
I have the most amazing life.
I choose that. Out of the three you chose, love that. It made me happy just hearing that, you know, just appreciating your life. And I get to do this. This is me. That's it. That one wins. I take, wedding day.
You're right.
It's still, okay, cool.
Yeah.
The saddest, the opposite of that, the saddest day of your life. If this is going to make you cry, I'm going to take it out because it made my other guest cry.
I think the saddest day of my life, probably I was, I remember a very sad day. It's the first one that comes to mind, so I'll describe it. So I was newly sober. I've been in recovery maybe a year, 9 months maybe, but I wasn't working the program. And so my disease of alcoholism was still running rampant, and I was suicidal. I think that was the saddest day. I was in the state of, if all there is pain, what's the point of living any further? And I was suicidally depressed. I didn't actually get to the point of planning a suicide. And in that dark, dark, dark time, though, when I was really thinking that this would be the best solution to get out of the pain, someone called me from my church. I was at the Church of Agape with Reverend Michael Beckwith, who you met that day when we did the Divine Feminine Conference. So he was my spiritual teacher in LA. And so someone from the church called me and asked me if I would teach the advanced students in their spiritual classes in the science of mind. And it just turned everything around. It was a miracle, actually, because I was there I was, you know, like in the depths of despair, and the light shone in the darkness, and someone asked me to step up and teach this class, which was such an honor because I was only newly qualified. And it was like the hand of God was upon me. And of course, the thought of suicide left. Yeah,
that's a beautiful story. And you know that the suicide was not for you to kill yourself. It was just to get the pain away. Just end already. Thank you for that. Third question, money. What's your relationship with money? And what are your thoughts on money? Money is energy. What is money for you?
I've had, I could say, a difficult relationship with money most of my life, feeling unworthy and having money reflect that in the physical universe, feeling scared of the power of money, scared of the responsibility of money. I do definitely see it as an energy and believe that, again, as a result of the Bible talking about money as the filthy lucre and money is the root of all evil. And actually, truthfully, I know the attachment to money is the root of all evil. The attachment to anything in the physical is the root of all evil, not money per se. But anyway, the conditioning, has stuck. So we have a very contorted relationship with money in our culture, sadly. And it symbolizes freedom, power, all of the things that we say we want. For me, what I now understand through the spiritual work is that it's for me to cultivate a healthy relationship with money and to see it not as a power in itself, but as something that is something that can flow in my life as a means of exchange.
Yeah.
And I'm not there yet. Yeah. So, I've never been... physically, or should I say, I've never been close to being hungry, but I've never experienced that I have no money and I can't get food or buy food. I've never gone to that depth of poverty, but I've been, I think, poor in the spirit. Like I haven't really seen who I am as a spiritual being. And living in the knowledge of who I am is the key to living in fullness, living in the sense of all my needs are met. So that's what I'm cultivating now. All my needs are met and I appreciate everything that I have. And then if I need money, money comes. If I need food, food comes. If I need clothes, clothes are there. If I need petrol is, it's like that. It's like just appreciating that I am supplied, I am supported, I am sustained. And then the money flows into that.
You give the best answers, man. I love your answers.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I love your honesty and vulnerability around money. I ask this question to everybody because I don't think we speak about money enough, same as sex.
Yeah, exactly.
So asking questions like this actually on the spot, I think you get the most honest answer, The next one that I had forgotten before we hit record, I just remembered it. It's time and attention. In your opinion, if you had to direct people to use their time and attention, where would you direct them to? Like, how should we use our time and where should we spend our attention? I know these are tough questions.
Wow, what a great question. Well, so I would say inquiring into who you are as a spiritual being, like spending your time giving your attention to that most important inquiry, who am I as a spiritual being? What is my relationship with the infinite, with the whole? What is my divine purpose in this life? So staying in the inquiry and opening up to the answers that might come. So that if I'm giving my attention to those questions, then the answers will come to me. And that's, to me, the most important thing for us to do here.
Yeah. If you were to spend your time, that's where you should spend it. Yeah. I like that. I agree. I think I do that. That's why I'm talking to you now. It's nearly 9 o'clock. We need to wrap up. Okay. Last question.
Okay.
What's your hope for the future? What do you imagine will it be happening in 2045? Will we have flying cars? I'm kidding. But what's your general hope for humanity in the future? Where should, hope.
My hope for humanity comes from the rise of the divine feminine. I think that's going to be the thing that's going to be the most, create the most traction, the most healing energy to heal our planet from the destruction that we've that we've experienced up till now. So healing, bringing the feminine back into focus and bringing, expressing her in our lives consciously, that is my hope for the whole human race. And I think if we don't, there is no hope, actually. I don't think there's another way to do this, because what we've done so far hasn't really worked.
And this is just a bonus. Do you think, in a way, COVID is part of facilitating that type of a new consciousness, in a way?
Yeah, it's forced everyone to go within, literally.
And sit down.
And reflect, reevaluate. Also made us even more dependent on technology, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I think that Reverend Michael said it in a service the other day, that those of you who couldn't use computers before COVID, you've learned to use computers. That's a very good thing. Like, stop complaining about COVID. Yeah, so we've all developed in ways that we wouldn't have imagined. And I trust that that's part of our evolutionary imperative, that this was what was required for us at this stage in our journey.
Definitely. Reverend Stephanie Clark, I thank you so much for your time. I am grateful for this conversation, and I'm very happy for you.
Thank you.
In your new life in the States. I hope one day we will be able to be traveling and I'll come through. Because funny, the US was the next step for me. My first trip outside the country was in Thailand. You know, I'm not as well traveled as you in 2018. So I was going to come to America, to Los Angeles in particular, to come and attend one of Rob Bell's sessions. I don't know if you know a man called
Rob Bell. He wrote The Sex God, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and also The Love Wins. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe my next trip will be to you.
Thank you. That'll be great. We'll do that. Thank you. Yeah. Great to speak to you, LeBeau. Thanks so much.
Now, how interesting is that? I would really, really love to hear from you. I would really love to hear your thoughts on this, because almost all of us that went through church have some form of sexual trauma, not as in, you know, literal sexual trauma, but in our minds and how we were conditioned or how we were educated around sex in the church. I'm sure we can tell each other story after story. And somehow it's a wound, you know, it becomes a bit of a wound. That's why we are the way we are around sex. We are super, super weird. You know, we get men who want virgins, you know, when they get married, but those virgins must act like porn stars, you know, for lack of a better example. So, you know, that whole confusion around virginity and sexual looseness and whatnot that the church or religious institutions have so properly instilled in us, that we are now sitting and trying to heal from that. And this is what makes the work of Reverend Steph, the work of Reverend Masofia, TED, the work of Gogo Joy, because Gogo Joy also does a lot of healing around the womb and our sexuality, becomes so important. So like I said before, really just get used to this, relax and stretch with us, and let's see if we can heal these wounds that unintentionally, hopefully, the religious institutions instilled in us. Yeah, so get used to Reverend Steph. We're going to have her quite a few times. All right, with that, let me wish you love and all green lights until next week, hopefully. And I'm saying hopefully because we might skip next week. There's quite a lot happening around my space. So hold thumbs. I might show up or I might not show up next week. If I don't show up, I will definitely see you the week after. Lots of work in the plate, and you know, sometimes you wanna take a break from something just so that you can push other things that are at that moment a little bit more important. So let's see how it goes. I wish you love and all green lights, my friends. Until next time.
If you enjoy the Stretch Podcast and want to support us, you can do so by sharing any episode with your friends, family, or colleagues. You can send Lebo a voice note with your thoughts, questions to the guests, and overall commentary. The voice note option can be found on our website, stretchpodcast.co.za. You can also contribute any amount of money via Stretch Podcast support. Found on our website, stretchpodcast.co.za. Simply click on the pod support. Thank you, and see you again next week for another episode on the Stretch Podcast.